fuck you. Australia, Germany, Africa.
Here we go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! And here we are, a brand new week begins on the horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. And that's where you need to go if you want to jump into the chat room. A good group forming up already. Good evening to Jug of Punch and Texas Tea and Anatole. Good evening to longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderators Lottie and Sparky, who, being a third stage guild navigator, has folded space to become Man Cave. Many machines on X. It is the 12th day of October 2015, and yes, a brand new broadcast week begins right here, right now, with, of course, you know, Moran Monday. Oh, Lord, going to be busy. Please to recall that this is a program that is supported not by advertising, not by overt attempts to deliver you to the tender mercies of various and sundry corporate entities, but rather is an actual program attempting to deliver content, participation, and conversation to you for no other reason than the conversation and the participation. Yes. And with that in mind, we try to raise about $200 per evening. And thanks to everyone over the weekend, subscribers who helped us close out the previous week and not finish in the hole. That was most helpful. Thank you very much indeed. So, $200 an evening, one at 200, two at 100, four at 50, eight at 25, 16 at 1250. Yeah, 40 at 5, etc., etc., etc. And the PayPal interface is at headonradionetwork.com under the tab Contribute. Or you can always just use my email address, bobkincaid@gmail.com. That's how we've got the whole PayPal thing set up. Check personal and gift, and that way you save the transaction fees, if you wish. But that's how we keep this going. For those of you who prefer to operate by the U.S. Postal Service, and there are many of you who do, and thank you for making things interesting for Boss Man Wayne when he heads to the echo chamber and occasionally doesn't have to wear his spider-proof gloves. Thank you very much indeed. That address is The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, B-E-C-K-L-E-Y, W-V 25801. Checks and money orders, of course, made payable not to Bob Kincaid, because I never see him, but to The Horn. As noted, yes, it is the 12th day of October 2015, and it never ceases to amaze me that we actually like close banks and stuff on this day. Yeah, go figure. Because this is still by some people, and why the United States still does this, I got no idea. We celebrate this as Columbus Day. As if Columbus's sighting of land on this day in 1492 was anything to be excited about. Yeah, but Bob, you wouldn't be here. Yeah, and I'm not so in love with me that I think that sacrificing a few million human beings who were wiped out by Spanish and Portuguese and English and to a certain extent French avarice and disease is anything to... I don't know, that somehow makes my own existence justified. Supposedly, Columbus Day is a big thing in the Italian communities. A lot of years ago when the story broke about the Norse people actually getting to North America long before Columbus did, and that caused near rioting, death threats, and that sort of thing inside the Italian community in the United States, because for some reason or another, Columbus is somebody they're really, really proud of. For the most part, Christopher Columbus was a religious maniac, hell-bent on domination and commercial profit. And why we celebrate this day, it really blows my mind. Among other things, and there's a trend, and I acknowledge it, and I think it is better than what we previously had. There's a trend toward renaming this day Indigenous Peoples Day in the Americas. But even that I take issue with. We need to find some other day. I guess I'm presuming to speak for Indigenous peoples here. I don't mean to. This is simply my opinion. This is no day upon which to celebrate Indigenous peoples. This is a day of mourning, a day that is best forgotten. I mean, pick some other day with some meaning as Indigenous Peoples Day. How about making a national holiday out of the day that Custer got what was coming to him at the Little Bighorn? Yeah. Or making, how about Indigenous Peoples Day as the day that DeSoto died? I think, and you know, Lottie notes there's also the Knights of Columbus, the Roman Catholic fraternal organization. Probably wouldn't. How about making them the Knights of someone else? And how about they not be knights? Kniggets. Yeah. Let's look into the mind of Christopher Columbus for a moment, shall we? From a letter to King Ferdinand and Queen Isabella of Spain. Your Highnesses, as Catholic Christians and princes who love the holy Christian faith and the propagation of it, and who are enemies to the sect of Muhammad and to all idolatries and heresies, resolve to send me, Cristobal Colon, to the said parts of India to see the said princes, with a view that they might be converted to our holy faith. Thus, after having turned out all the Jews from all your kingdoms and lordships, your Highnesses gave orders to me that with a sufficient fleet I should go to the said parts of India. I shall forget sleep, and shall work at the business of navigation, so that the service is performed. This one in particular, is distressing. If not outright obnoxious. Upon arriving in what would be referred to as the New World, the said Cristobal Colon observed the native inhabitants and wrote of them, Howard Zinn documents this in the People's History of the United States. And I mean, these are all things that he wrote down. I mean, they weren't written about him. This is primary source material. the stuff that Dr. Bill likes so well and I've learned to value so much. By the way, Dr. Bill is back. He's had a bit of he went on a trip up to New England, had a bit of a rough patch, felt like crap, kind of an upper respiratory congestion. But he's back and he's feeling better and he was on the air today. And I highly encourage you to get the podcast. It's already up over at whiterosesociety.org. You can just subscribe, and every time there's a new program, bing, it'll be there in your feed. And that's what it does. It goes bing. No, it doesn't. But writing of the native peoples and their essential decency. Cristobal Colon wrote, "They brought us parrots and balls of cotton, and spears, and many other things, which they exchanged for the glass beads and hawk's bells." You know, little tinkling bells that you put around the neck of a hawk. And glass beads, which were of value to, I mean, really? Yeah. "They willingly traded everything they owned. They were well built, with good bodies and handsome features. They do not bear arms and do not know them, for I showed them a sword. They took it by the edge and cut themselves out of ignorance. They have no iron. Their spears are made of cane. They would make fine servants. With 50 men, we could subjugate them all and make them do whatever we want." And, of course, part of the holy, sacred Caesarean Catholic mission upon which Cristobal Colon was involved, involved kidnapping. Yeah, probably some rape, too. But definitely kidnapping. "As soon as I," and again, from a letter to King Ferdinand, "as soon as I arrived in the Indies, in the first island which I found, I took some of the natives by force, in order that they might learn and might give me information of whatever there is in these parts. And so it was that they soon understood us, and we them, either by speech or by signs, and they have been very serviceable." Serviceable. "I took some of the natives by force." Mm-hmm. In the name of Christ Jesus, he kidnapped people. Now, this is what we celebrate on October 12th. And I don't think any culture that considers itself even remotely civilized, and we might not, more on that later. Would be celebrating anything like that. I mean, if anybody should be celebrating this, maybe Italy and Spain, possibly Portugal. Cristobal Colon tried to sell his hustle to the Portuguese crown, and they went, "Nah, I don't think so. I mean, you know, we got this worked out." And but let's make no bones about it, Cristobal Colon, hero. Well, he wasn't a bigot. He knew beauty when he saw it. "While I was in the boat, I captured a very beautiful Carib woman, whom the said Lord Admiral gave to me." This is Michel de Cuneo, one of the crewmen. "I captured a very beautiful Carib woman, whom the said Lord Admiral," that would be Columbus, "gave to me. When I had taken her to my cabin, she was naked, as was their custom. I was filled with a desire to take my pleasure with her, and attempted to satisfy my desire. She was unwilling, and so treated me with her nails that I wished I had never begun. But, to cut a long story short, I then took a piece of rope and whipped her soundly, and she set forth such incredible screams that you would not have believed your ears. Eventually we came to such terms, I assure you, that you would have thought that she had been brought up in a school for whores. Mm-hmm. Yeah. School for whores. Lovely. That's what we celebrate. And then that's what we teach children to celebrate. Only we don't tell them about the whole school for whores rape scene or anything. There do exist accounts written by people who were horrified at what they were witnessing. That have existed down through the ages. The first Archbishop of Mexico, Juan de Zumarraga, tried to detail some of it. Of course, he wasn't really helping that much, forcibly converting the locals, what remained of the vast and magnificent Triple Alliance empire, if you want to use that word. Another was Bartolomeo de las Casas. He was a priest, and he was with Columbus when he went first to what would become known as Cuba. And in the history that he left, he wrote, "Endless testimonies prove the mild and pacific temperament of the natives. But our work was to exasperate, ravage, kill, mangle, and destroy." In other words, he's saying that the natives that they met were decent and kind, arguably far more civilized than the filthy Spaniards. And by filthy, it's not a derogatory term. They were filthy. They did not bathe. They stank such that you could smell them long before you could see them. And they were considerably shorter than their new indigenous acquaintances, because the indigenous peoples ate a dramatically better diet. Little Spaniards, except for all the weaponry, about the size of freaking hobbits. But de las Casas writes, "And the Christians, with their horses and swords and pikes, began to carry out massacres and strange cruelties against them. They attacked the towns and spared neither the children nor the aged nor pregnant women nor women in childbed. Culture of life! Not only stabbing them and dismembering them, but cutting them to pieces as if dealing with sheep in the slaughterhouse. They," and "they," of course, refers to the Christians, "they laid bets as to who, with one stroke of the sword, could split a man in two, or could cut off his head, or spill out his entrails with a single stroke of the pike. They took infants from their mother's breasts, snatching them by the legs and pitching them head first against the crags, or snatched them by the arms and threw them into the rivers, roaring with laughter and saying as the babies fell into the waters, 'Boil there, you offspring of the devil.' Other infants they put to the sword along with their mothers and anyone else who happened to be nearby. They made some low, wide gallows on which the hanged victim's feet almost touched the ground, stringing up their victims in lots of 13 in memory of our Redeemer and his 12 apostles, and then set burning wood at their feet, and thus burned them alive." Do To others they attached straw, or wrapped their whole bodies in straw and set them afire. With still others, all those they wanted to capture alive, they cut off their hands and hung them round the victim's neck, saying, "Go now, carry the message," meaning take the news to the Indians who have fled to the mountains. They usually dealt with the chieftains and nobles in the following way. They made a grid of rods, which they placed on forked sticks, and then lashed the victims to the grid and lighted a smoldering fire underneath, so that little by little, as those captives screamed in despair and torment, their souls would leave them. Yeah. Columbus Day. What say we just let this be another day on the calendar and pick a more decent day for honoring the indigenous peoples upon whose backs we colonized this hemisphere. Yeah, this was all kind of brought home to me last month while I was traveling, Berg and I. And we stopped in Cartersville, Georgia, at what was a great city of what we know only as the Mississippian culture. We don't know what they called themselves. We don't know their language. But we know things. We know we didn't just destroy these cultures. We caught them right as they were making a transition, a technological transition that could have taken them a next step to who only knows what. What few artworks we have remaining from that particular site are breathtaking in their detail and the technical achievement involved. Tell you what, go find you a hunk of marble and see if you can carve anything without a metal tool. Well, that particular culture had figured out how to make statues out of solid marble with no metal tools. They'd try it in limestone. There's a lot of limestone carving down in the areas of the former Triple Alliance. If you're smart, you might figure out how to take take heavy cord and put, say, ground rock dust on it with an adhesive, and use that as a method of carving. But that's where they were. They were working in copper. One culture that we know of had actually made the transition, and it's a big one, had made the transition from working in copper to figuring out that at the same time that they were melting copper, if they added a certain percentage of tin, it would yield up a metal that we call bronze. And that is the beginning of something referred to by the anthropologists and archaeologists as the Bronze Age. Mm-hmm. And they were already there. And of course, it's out of the Bronze Age that we get the heroes and gods of the Upanishads, the Rig Veda, the Old Testament, the Iliad and the Odyssey, the Epic of Gilgamesh. Recent discovery regarding the Epic of Gilgamesh that Dr. John turned me on to. A fragment was found in the Kurdish Museum clay tablet, cuneiform. If you can't read it, you won't know what's on it. And it just happened to be a fragment of the Epic of Gilgamesh that had never heretofore been known of, in which one of the people that Gilgamesh and Enkidu slay is represented not as a god, but as more of a mere human. Which is really, really quite fascinating, because I suspect that that's the way most of the great god stories began. Stories of humans that were later forgotten. The humanness was forgotten, and only the magnificent works. And you make assumptions that these have to be supernatural beings. For instance, by the time 200 years later, after that city, Etowah, in northwest Georgia, had been abandoned, 200 years later, the Cherokee people could only say that supernatural beings had lived there when they were quite clearly human, but it had been forgotten in the death and the disease and the diaspora. DeSoto's people at Etowah took the headman, the English words like chief or their leader. They took him hostage. They kidnapped him. DeSoto did, and took him westward toward another village. Yeah, he died, and when the leader died, the city fell apart. That and the disease, too. So that's what we celebrate. And I imagine at various places in this country, there's not a lot of celebrating going on today. June 25th would be good. That was the great pushback against George Armstrong Custer. That would work. But I just wanted to remark on that, because 26 minutes out of a 3-hour broadcast, you know what? It's worth far more than that to remember what was destroyed and what was lost, and to wonder if but for a moment how much could have changed the world had the Europeans been anything but a bunch of uncivilized barbarian brutes. So I'll take a pass on referring to this as Indigenous Peoples Day. Maybe try to find a better day for doing such remembering. Now, what do we have? What do we have this evening? Well, morans. Because, of course, this is the day, Monday, that we devote to them, because they tend to pile up over the weekend, and no time like the present for doing what needs done.
You've got to remember that these are just simple farmers. These are people of the land. You know, morons.
Hurry, hurry, hurry. Step right up. It's Moran Monday on the horn. You will not believe your ears. We have gathered for you this Monday, like every Monday, a collection of morans, the likes of which will shock you, will confound you, will occasionally make you laugh, will occasionally make you weep. We've got them all. Birther morans, deather morans, ninther morans, tenther morans, deather morans, booger-eating morans, Republican morans, libertarian morans, Bircher morans, Klan's morans, every kind of moran known to the universe. Yes, indeed, yes, indeed. You can't tell the morans without a program, and this here's the program that tells the morans. You just can't tell them much. Behind this thin cybernetic veil of canvas, we have them all, with the simple advisory, the gentle advisory, gentle listener, that you keep your children, small animals, purses, and European messenger bags, and wallets close to hand, as the morans, being financially conservative, can get grabby. Head for the hills, or you'll be up to your armpits in morans. Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. We have a surfeit. We have a we have an abundance. We have an embarrassment of Moran riches. Let's start in Tennessee, shall we? Do let's. You may recall a couple of weeks ago, a few weeks ago, three, maybe four, they all run together after nearly 10 years of this. You may recall a good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered Christian who had a hissy about the fact that his precious child was taking a test that included the Islam there on 9/11, and it was a slap in the face. And he said, take the F for Jesus and don't take the test. Because, you know, you don't need those grades to get into college or anything. Well, don't worry about it. The fundies ain't going to college. And if they do, they're going to Bob Jones or Jerry Falwell University or maybe Pat Robertson or Oral Roberts or some idiocy like that. Well, we have a response. There in Tennessee, Stan, a member of the Tennessee State Legislature, whose name, because the goddess of irony never sleeps and she never misses a lick, is representing Sheila Butts, has introduced a bill that would prohibit any teaching of any religious doctrine except Christianity until high school. Now, according to the newspaper, the once fine newspaper in Nashville, the Tennessean, that occasionally still does attempt to do journalism, representing Butts, says that, I think that probably the teaching that is going on right now in 7th, 8th grade is not age appropriate. They're not able to discern a lot of times whether it's indoctrination or whether they're learning about what a religion teaches. You got that? So maybe that explains Sunday school and why we get children into church so early, doesn't it? Oh, yeah. Oh, yes, as a matter of fact, it does. There in Murray County, in Williamson County, and several others, our take the F for Jesus guy was in Lebanon, Tennessee. What county is that? They don't like the fact that children are being taught about, well, much of anything, I guess, in regard to any religion in the world except Christianity. Now, according to the Tennessean story, representing Butt, blame the goddess of irony, not me. Representing Butt says that if a religion is mentioned in middle school, then it's up to the State Board of Education to make sure, quote, the reference does not amount to teaching any form of religious doctrine to the students. This doesn't sit well with Metro Nashville Public Schools social studies teacher Kyle Alexander, who I would suggest get a good home security system. Kyle Alexander gave an interview to some remarks to the Tennessean and said, the reality is the Muslim world brought us algebra, 1001 nights, and some can argue it helped bring about the Renaissance. There's a lot of influence that that part of the world had on world history. Representing Butt don't care. She says, if you're teaching the Middle East, then of course you're going to mention the religion that was prevalent in that area. But to teach the doctrine is another thing. It's just a bill about having balancing the teaching of religion in education. It Yeah, Butt doesn't think much of middle schoolers or junior high school students. She says, junior high is not the time that children are doing the most analysis. Insecurity is in junior high a lot of times, and students are not able to differentiate a lot of things they are taught. You know, that's why there's a wave of Islam sweeping through Tennessee's junior high schools. Oh, the stupid is strong with this one. And we got to have balance, because representing Butts is Bill. Says if any comparative religion is taught in high school, I tell you what. Let's teach cultures and not religions. And let's leave comparative religion for college or something. I mean, because the youngins, they can't understand doctrine. I mean, they can understand that if they have a personal relationship with the Lord Jesus Christ, and if they've been down to the tent meeting and they got dunked in the creek, which was probably running with some kind of poison around here, that they is forever saved, and once saved, always saved, and they have been given the baptism. That's doctrine that a child can get his head around. But a child can't so much be comprehending other doctrines. But there's got to be balance. If they're going to teach comparative religion in high school, then no religion can be taught more than any other. We're going to count words or something. And meanwhile, of course, Tennessee is aflame against your common core. Right. Well, this is certainly going to make sure that a lot more Tennessee high schoolers are getting into your better colleges out there. You know, your Harvards and your Yales and your Cornells and your Browns and your Princetons and it, right. Gee, I wonder if anywhere in any Tennessee high school today, I wonder if any Tennessee children were taught taught about the behavior of the upstanding, God-fearing, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, Holy Roman Catholic Christians. What they did to the native peoples on this here Columbus Day. Well, hell, maybe they was out of school, so they didn't have to learn it. They could just celebrate it. But it's probably best if we just don't teach about Islam at all, right? Mm-hmm. That's a nice start, wouldn't you say? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you remember? I think it was Friday. I think it was Friday we were talking about this. Over in Gastonia, North Carolina, when the woman singing Jesus Loves the Little Children decided to do to run circles in the middle of a busy four-way, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16 lane intersection. Or maybe 8 lanes, depending on how you count it. And we all know how I am with the ciphering. But you remember the one bystander that was standing there hollering, "Shoot that bitch! Shoot her! Dang! Shoot her! Kill her!" Remember that? Because Merca, the greatest country in the world on earth now, today, forever. Right. Well, we've got a new manifestation of that self-same concept. This one, of course, coming from Texas. Where else? Arlington, in particular, where the AT&T Stadium, otherwise known as the Jones Mahal, Terry Jones's giant edifice that he erected to his own vanity. Well, you know, with a lot of taxpayer money. Who are we kidding here? But anyway, New England went into Dallas and beat the Cowboys 30-6. It was a right proper stomping. And a couple of men got into an argument, and the argument turned into a fist fight. Well, things don't stay at the fist fight level in Texas, where they're all concerned, you know, with freedom. Let's check out the audio, shall we?
College freshmen be like, we'll quit when we graduate.
No, college freshmen be like, I hate these stupid ads. What blows my mind is the fact that you can have something queued up and you hit play and you get the ad again. So here's a local officer on the scene.
Police Department. Around 8:20 p.m., off-duty officers that were assigned to the stadium events out here between the Cowboys and also our baseball team were alerted to a fight here at Lot 10 on the property line here. It was a fight between citizens. When officers arrived on scene, they did hear one gunshot, at least one, and they located a man in his early 40s with a gunshot wound, a very serious injury. That man has been transported to a local hospital via air ambulance now due to the seriousness of his injuries. The shooting suspect that we believe was involved was stopped by officers and taken into custody. He was also transported to a local hospital for some injuries not related to the fight. I believe he was trying to kind of get away and may have tripped over a retaining wall here. So at this point, not sure what...
you kind of got to love that part. Yeah, he had some injuries, said the officer, not related to the altercation, but some injuries he received in getting away. I think he walked into a door. No, he tripped over a retaining wall. Yeah, that's it. That's what it was. That's the ticket. I have a feeling the Dallas PD beat the living shit out of him. But he just shot a guy in the head, so because that's what happened. But it's not that's because see what happened is when the two got into a fist fight, the one guy was apparently getting the worse of it, and so he pulled out because. You know, when you go to a Dallas Cowboys football game, naturally, you'd want to have your freedom protector with you because you never know when there's going to be an outbreak of Kenyan Muslim usurping socialism break out there at the Jerry Jones Memorial Monumental Ungodly Edifice to his own ego complex. Yeah. So they're duking it out, and then Cletus pulls out his freedom protector, and here's the cool part. Here's where the Merca, greatest country in the world on earth now, today, forever, part comes in. Because when he pulled out his freedom protector, the crowd around him, who 2,000 years ago were hollering Barabbas, give us Barabbas, began to holler, shoot him, dang it, this is America, freedom, shoot him. Shoot him! You do not have to take him home and shoot him now. You shoot him later. You can shoot him now. Which dude did? Interviewed by the Fort Worth Star-Telegram, witness Leslie Williams said, "I didn't think he was going to pull the trigger." Lieutenant Cook there, whom you heard from a couple of minutes ago, and no, the cops did not beat the shit out of him. He actually was taken into custody after he tripped over a low retaining wall and bumped his leg trying to run away, because he realized he had just committed a shooting in Texas, and that if his victim, having been shot in the head, was to die, then, well, he'd be getting the horizontal crucifixion. Well, If he was a white guy, he might just get life. No, they'd both been a tailgating at the stadium since the afternoon, which means they were both probably so intoxicated as to barely be able to speak more than a series of hoots and clicks and grunts and foul-smelling burps. The investigation continues, but yes, the crowd gathered around him, hollered, "Shoot him! Quit screwing around! This is freedom we're talking about! Blow him away! It's Texas!" Because remember, nah, he may not go to prison at all. He may say that he was in fear for his life and get to mount a self-defense defense and just walk away from it all, chuckling. Because Merca. Yeah, great day for freedom in Merca. Great day indeed. Great day in the morning. Yeah. Also, let's stick around in Texas, shall we? This was a couple of days ago. Tony posted this on the Facebook page. Mm-hmm. It was late at night down San Antonio way. About 4 a.m. when a fella heard a noise in his house and he saw a flash of light. That's when he got up out of bed and grabbed his freedom protecting shotgun. Wolverines! And saw a shadowy figure at a distance in his house, so he let go of one heroic, patriotic, Second Amendment supporting blast from the 12 gauge. I'm presuming 12 gauge. It might have been a 410. You know, some people favor 410s for home defense, a little snake charmer, single shot affair. But no, it turned out that the intruder that he shot at 4 o'clock in the morning was his 48-year-old wife, Deborah Kelly. The news reports said that police tried to resuscitate her when they got back, when they got there, but being as how he'd shot her in the chest with a shotgun at pretty close range, well, your shotgun blast into the chest goes in maybe about the size of a quarter and comes out about the size of a grapefruit in the back, so there's not much, you don't have a lot of lung to work with there in your resuscitation efforts. Neighbor Dale Hara said, "It's horrible, horrible, and she was just a wonderful person. I have to believe it was an accident, a very tragic accident." It was just freedom, right? Because at 4 o'clock in the morning, who else should be in your house except you and, you know, your spouse? Or maybe your kids, if you got kids, but no, it's just, naturally being Texas, he assumed that, and I don't know, maybe they slept in separate bedrooms like Ozzie and Harriet or something, but he jumped up out of the bed, didn't notice his wife wasn't in it, grabbed the shotgun, and bang, freedom. Police continue to investigate, but Texas law, because it's Texas, Texas law says that if somebody's trying to break into your home, you ain't got to retreat, and you can stand there and blaze away. Of course, nobody was trying to break into his home. Presumptively, the break-in had already happened, except it wasn't a break-in. It was his wife But we live in a country that is so paranoid and so pants-wetting afraid of itself that we shoot first and ask questions later. Because Merca. Yeah, he said he saw a light and someone standing at a distance. And you know, nobody ever gets up to... Well, I'll tell you what, you get up to go to the bathroom in the middle of the night at your peril in Texas. I don't know, you reckon this is going to see a significant rise in the sale of Depends? Wait till the sun up to go to the bathroom. And I don't care how much blueberry skunk you smoked the night before. If you get the munchies at 4 a.m., you just kind of deal with it, all right? Because if you get up to go looking for that rogue bag of potato chips, you could wind up dead. What else? Ever so much more else, of course. Let's see here. Let me just check in real quick. I've got it handy right here, I think. Because let's stick with the freedom protecting theme, shall we? Yeah, courtesy of our buddy Todd via WBTV.com. I'm going to have to leave Texas for this. The WBTV part lets you know. Oh, for pity's sakes. I don't want your stupid app. No, this is in, South Carolina, Stan. And I warn you, this is, I mean, Jesus. Because down there in South Carolina, Stan, you never know when just as the Spaniards landed on the beaches of Hispaniola in 1492, your Muslims are going to just come pouring right up the beach there at Myrtle or down to Hilton Head or maybe come right into Charleston Harbor. This is Rock Hill, South Carolina, where at least this one doesn't end in death. Granny has, she's not past tense, mercifully. One wonders if she's learned a lesson. Granny has an orange Chevy Camaro. And yesterday, emergency responders and police were called to the scene of said orange Chevy Camaro at the intersection of Ogden Road and Heckle Boulevard. Because Granny was in the passenger seat of the orange Chevy Camaro when her two-year-old toddler grandson had found the family freedom protector. Baby was in the back seat. Now, we don't understand quite yet how it is the two-year-old, who should have been strapped into a car seat, because automobiles are dangerous in most states, so in South Carolina, you don't have to wear a helmet if you want to go out riding on your Freedom motorcycle. So maybe South Carolina affords that kind of freedom to toddlers, too, and they don't have to be strapped into an infant carrier. But great auntie was driving the car, and suddenly, with Granny in the front passenger seat and great auntie driving, they heard a bang! And that's when she turned around to see the little two-year-old feller holding the pistol with both hands, you know, just like he'd seen on the TV, or maybe just like he'd watched Grampy out at the shooting range, holding it with two hands to keep it nice and steady and level. And no, the child was not in a car seat. And Rock Hill Police spokesperson Captain Mark Bollinger said, we're still trying to figure out how the child pulled the trigger. We're encouraging folks, as always, keep your weapons secured, especially around small children. No, really? Never quite got to that whole keep the children in a car seat, because... It's Moran Monday. What do you want? Oh, yeah. How about keeping weapons away? Keep your weapons secured, or especially around small children. How about don't have weapons around small children? Now, apparently, Gammy is going to survive. Her injuries were described as not life-threatening. Our 2 year, and it was a 357 mag, by the way. Our young firearms enthusiast and availer of Second Amendment remedies.
Wolverines.
It hasn't quite learned how to take dead aim yet. Oh, this'll be big fun years later down at the Thanksgiving dinner table. Yeah, and then little Bubba Joe Jr., remember how you plugged Granny with the 357? Oh, I tell you what, we was a little worried that day, but dang. Looking back on it all, that was kind of fun. I mean, there's Andy going along in the orange Camaro, and you know the insurance company to this day has not paid up on the property damage from where you put the bullet through the seat before it went through Gammy. Shoot him in the back, Gomez. Shoot him in the back. We never have a dull Moran Monday now, do we? No. Ron and Raleigh with a note going back to Ferdinand and Isabella. Meanwhile, back in Spain, Ferdinand and Isabella were forcing Jews to convert to Catholicism on the promise of sparing their lives, and when they'd converted, the king and queen stole their wealth and put them to the torch. Ah, royalty and Christianity. Isn't it wonderful? See, for the David Bartons of the world who think that Jefferson and Franklin and Adams and the lot wanted a Christian nation, see, this is why they didn't. Because their writings are rife with remarks about how what has Christianity ever done except cause bloodshed and misery? I mean, they said that kind of thing. I mean, they were drinking buddies with Thomas Paine, and he was quite the anti-organized religion kind of fellow. They felt like it would be okay religion if everybody just kept it to themselves and didn't try to make a government out of it. Which, of course, is what the right wing wants to do. More on that in a little bit. And by the way, just as an addendum to Ron and Raleigh's note, after forcibly converting the Jews to Christianity and stealing their wealth, the ones they didn't put to the torch, they waited around and just to make double sure that they were really good and Christian, they'd say, yeah, come on over here and have some of this pulled pork barbecue, you converso you. And if your converted Jew did not eat heartily enough of the pulled pork barbecue, then everybody would know that they would lapse. They'd lapsed, and there'd be a trip to the Inquisition, and then, well, like Ron mentions, a barbecue of an entirely different sort. With regard to Tennessee and the teaching of Islam, Steve says, I have an idea. Let's just teach history facts. Of course, those are liberally biased, I guess. Well, yeah, being liberal. Relative to Texas, Marty says, how about putting a refrigerator and a hot plate in one's bedroom just in case? Yeah. Marty also says of the South Carolina story, try the kid as an adult! Snark. So, herein ends the filibobster. That's just some of the Moran Monday stories that were sticking above the surface. We got a lot more floating around out there, you know, dead ahead, as it were. Oh yes, we do. And again, an hour into the program, I'll note that we try to raise $200 every evening. And thus far, for the beginning of the program, we are at zero. Yeah, hopefully that will be remedied in the next couple, though. Be kind of nice not to start the week in the hole. Now, of course, the conversation radio portion of the program can now begin. Your calls are more than welcome. You know there's three ways. To reach the program telephonically at present, one being 304-574-8178, another being 304-663-HORN, 304-663-4676. That, of course, is what we call the stress line, named in honor of Bill Mr. Stress Miller, 304-663-4676. And, of course, Skype to Skype from anywhere on the planet for free, Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn. If you've never set up a contact with me and you want to do the conversating kind of thing, just send me a contact request. I'll approve it and we'll be off and running. Okay? Courtesy of Ron and Raleigh and dedicated to the representative from Tennessee. Yeah, a nifty little bumper for this Moran Monday. This is the Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
The party was jumping when Bertha got off of her stump. The whistles were blowing and everybody did the bump. But all the time Bertha had been working on a goodie. Now folks call it Bertha Butt Boogie.
When Bertha Butt Boogie, she started a Bertha Butt Boogie.
No question. Shaking, no grass grew where she'd been. The music was popping, the crowd had formed a ring. Her sisters yelled,
Boogie Bertha, do your thing!
For your information, Bertha had three sisters, Betty Butt, Bella Butt, and Bathsheba Butt.
When Bertha Butt did a good, she started
question. Sisters all knew that the birth of Bud Boogie was now the thing to do.
When Bertha followed in her sleep, she started a birth of Bud Boogie.
No question.
Really, really not heard that in a very long... I had even forgot about Bathsheba Butt. Yeah. Yeah. That, of course, the Jimmy Castor Bunch, the Bertha Butt Boogie, Part 1, courtesy of Ron and Raleigh. Oh, why not? Well, speaking of butts, the really, really white girls of Alpha Phi sorority at the University of California, Los Angeles like to do? They like to stuff things down their pants to make it look as if they have very large posteriors and attend parties at the Sigma Phi Epsilon house, I think it was. I think it was Sig Eps. For Kanye Western night. After all, this is More In Monday, so it kind of begs bringing up. Mm-hmm. There was an announcement of a big party going to take place at the Sig Ep house between the Sig Eps and the Alpha Phi's. And lo and behold, it involved white people doing blackface. Get it? Kanye Western. Mm-hmm. So, lo and behold, the privileged little white girls and privileged white boys gathered together, the word slipped out. Someone noticed on social media. And danged if there wasn't a protest that assembled in a hurry across from the house. Good. At which point, the party began to sort of fall apart, I guess you could say. And, well, the police showed up because somebody called the cops on the folks who were protesting. And, well, I'm kind of proud to announce this. The cops did not show up and shoot any of the protesters. Yay! I mean, that's a good thing, right? UCLA is over in an area of town, is that Westwood? Yeah, it was Sigma Phi Epsilon Fraternity and Alpha Phi Sorority. It was October the 6th. and the UCLA African Student Union was put off by the whole blackface thing, baggy clothes, big fake butts, literal blackface makeup. And so in really typically American fashion, and I mean, this is in the best traditions of American nonviolent civil protest, the African Student Union went over to the SIGEP fraternity house carrying hastily made signs saying Black Bruins Matter, because UCLA are the Bruins. Created a hashtag around that. Outside the house, they chanted, "Our culture is not a costume," which it isn't. And eventually, people began slipping away from the party. Now, what's interesting is that the fraternity knew, the SIGEPs knew what they were doing was wrong. But they didn't, you know, they objected to the PC police. Mm-hmm. And quite fascinatingly, when someone complimented one of the Alpha Phi sorority girls' big butt costumes, and she, "Well, thank you," one of the SIGEPs realized what had gone on and went, "Code 20, code 20, emergency, emergency!" Because they knew they'd been caught in their nasty little racist exercise. However, after after it looked like the party had broken up as a result of the protest, they began sneaking back in, trying to keep the party going, sneaking back in by ones and twos. Mm-hmm. UCLA, the administration there, didn't take kindly to this. They issued a statement, the administration of UCLA: "We're concerned about these allegations and earnestly working to gather information about what occurred, talking to all those involved. While we do not yet have all the facts, the alleged behavior is inconsistent with good judgment as well as our principles of community. We remind students that while they are free to celebrate in ways that draw upon popular culture, their specific choices can cause harm and pain to fellow members of their community. Put simply, just because you can do something does not mean you should." SIGEP Fraternity's national headquarters said, "The National Office of Sigma Phi Epsilon is investigating claims that its UCLA chapter hosted an inappropriately themed social event with Alpha Phi sorority. The fraternity is aware of images of female guests dressed in offensive and racially insensitive outfits." Really, they're not aware of any guys? "We have asked our UCLA chapter to temporarily suspend activities and work with our office and university staff to determine the facts of the event and the appropriate path forward. Building diverse and inclusive communities is core to our identity as an organization. We have zero tolerance for racist behavior. Sigma Phi Epsilon will continue to work with the university and UCLA community to investigate these claims and hold students accountable for any inappropriate behavior." Mm-hmm. Yeah, it just apparently it's a real challenge to get privileged young white people to understand that they can't just culturally appropriate and mock other people. "Oh yeah, sure, they themed it as Kanye Western, but it wound up being blackface." One of the photos is "Keeping Up with the Kardashians." the African Student Union at UCLA had to kind of bust a hump. To even get the administration to pay attention. But eventually they did. The Daily Bruin, the newspaper there, which is rather an impressive college newspaper, took some prodding, but they finally reported on the story. In the Daily Bruin story, newcomers were horrified that this was their introduction to college life. Jewel Bourne, a fifth-year English and gender studies student, said she was not surprised. Then there's Adrena Collins, another student at the college. She said, it's kind of insane to me. I thought the only colors that are supposed to matter here are blue and gold. Why do kids not know that it's wrong to go to parties like this? Why are we still having these same basic conversations? I don't think that it's everybody. I think there are people that are supporters and that they do believe that this is an issue. And it's looking like it's posited that there may be some suspensions following. As Carol notes, these are apparently the people who need the do not eat warning on the silica gel bags and stuff. Yeah. God. What? Hang on here. Let me check the chat. Somebody angry just said I just got knocked off the air. Okay, cool. So that might explain if you were trying to reach on the Skype line 304-574-8178 and couldn't get through. That might explain why. We will continue with more morans in a moment, but let's. Thank you, Marty. Still reading, still copying you 5x5. Good, good, good. Appreciate it. Let's check in with Jim over in Nevadistan. What's up, Jim?
Oh, no problem. I just, I put the computer on mute, and when you said that, I flipped it on, and you were coming through loud and clear.
I appreciate it.
So, and I'm on TuneIn, so.
And I haven't sorted out the particulars of it. There's got to be a way technologically for me to have an air monitor going, but I really can't, because on a radio board, you can monitor air or you can monitor, you know, you're out to air, and all I can monitor here is what's going out to air because of the latency and the delay and everything.
Right.
Kind of complicates matters a little bit.
Oh, I could see that, you know. Now Columbus Day, it should be Indigenous People's Bad Day, because that started, as you pointed out in the beginning, I missed like the first couple of minutes, but that's, yeah. I mean, what they did in the theme song, good old Neil Young song. You ever heard that Neil Young song, Cortez?
Oh, Cortez the Killer. Absolutely. I listened to it after the program the other night.
Yeah. I think I might have mentioned it, or maybe I didn't. I don't know. That puts it there right in a nutshell. You know. What do you have any plans for tomorrow? How are you
going to
cover the shit?
It's good you would ask. I still have to talk to Boss Man Wayne, but I may actually take the show on the road. There is a Democratic debate watching party over in Beckley, and I thought I might broadcast it live, or at least people watching it broadcast it live. Kind of depends on participation, you know what I mean?
Right.
What's the start time?
It's 4 p.m. out here, so it'd be...
7, yeah.
7 your time. I mean, because I was going to go to watch it at, try to hook up and watch it, but I'd say I'm just going to, I was going to do that, and I'm thinking, well, wait a minute, shit, I mean, do I have to blow up Malloy and Bob Kincaid? So I decided to go with you and Malloy.
And I appreciate it, Jim. But the thing is, I mean, I want to, you know, the Republican pageants have tended to start at like 8 and 9, right? Wasn't that the way it was?
I think they start around the same time because they want to catch the same, because they got to catch the East Coast, and then they got to catch the West Coast, the best coast. We're on West Coast time. I mean, Nevada's right in, I think it's right along the lines of Nevada. I mean, hooks and changes, but I know as long as I've lived in, off and on, as long as I've lived in Nevada for the last 20 years, we're always West Coast time. So.
I remember the first one started at like 9 or something, so that would have been 6 West Coast time. This doesn't help you guys much because 4 o'clock in the afternoon, people are still at work, and that makes you wonder if maybe there's an assumption being made, Jim, that the Pacific Coast is going to go for the Democrat anyway. They don't even matter.
Let's see. We went for Obama twice, but like before, we went. Nevada's changing; it's becoming more blue. To use the colors that they use, for blue and red states. Maybe I don't know. I don't know why they decided to do it. I guess that's why they did that, but. Probably, actually, technically a good decision. I mean, Washington State, Oregon, California is pretty much locked. Nevada too, and it's blue. And then Arizona, they don't fucking change your time when the time changes. It comes into, and it's like two states that do that. It always kind of cracks me up. Oh, we're gonna be different. We're just gonna. I think there's one in the Northeast that doesn't change.
Indiana and Arizona, I think.
Where? Indiana?
Yeah.
Okay, maybe it's not as far east. I thought it was one of those way up there and like around
Maine or something.
Something like that, yeah. But, no, I'm looking forward to it. Now I was kind of looking forward to, going and hanging and. Or, maybe meet some of the people, but I'll just do that through the Bernie campaign. And I don't know. I've got a good feeling about Bernie. I think he's gaining momentum. I don't know how he can pull it off.
Maybe this is wishful thinking on my part, Jim, but I keep seeing these articles popping now saying, 14 reasons Bernie can't possibly ever win. They seem to pop every time another article comes out showing that Bernie's building more momentum. So, and tomorrow, you know, if I do broadcast live tomorrow evening, I got to be careful. I mean, I'm an unabashed Bernie partisan, but this is a Democratic debate watching party. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So there'll be theoretically there'll be Hillary supporters there too, and I, you know, I'm still where I was. I remain a non-Hillary basher. I'm not going to do any Hillary bashing. The right wing, the right wing has been building a machine since 1992 whose only purpose is to do that, and I think they've got it banging on all eight cylinders. So they don't need any help from me or any other Democrat, and especially not the Bernie supporters.
No, and I'm the same way. There's things I don't like about her, and it's not that she's, I could care less about her gender, but I just prefer Bernie by an infinite amount. Yeah,
I'm not measuring this by gender or by skin tone no, I'm measuring this by policy. And Bernie's policies agree with my political philosophy. It's that simple. And I'm not inclined to listen to the, oh, he can't possibly win, he's a socialist.
Because
on the ballot, it's not going to say, I mean, if he's the Democratic nominee, it's not going to say Bernie Sanders, oh my God, socialist. It's going to say Bernie Sanders, D, Vermont.
Yeah, and then there was something I heard a while back. Oh, he's going to have trouble registering as a Democrat. He changed his party, so he's a Democrat. He's going to have trouble registering as a Democrat in a lot of the states. I don't know. I heard that story or I read that somewhere. But I mean, on my Twitter feed, I don't really mess with too much right wing crap. I mean, all I get is the sites I've taken. There's other stuff that comes in, but I mean, I can't, you know, it's like Fox News. I can watch it for about 5 minutes once in a while, but I can't. I mean, last time I watched it for more than that was, after one of the Republican debates. I tuned over, I turned it on just to see what it was, you know, what their spin was. And, you know, it was, you know, usual Fox garbage, you know, usual Fox crap.
Yeah, but again, this isn't right wing stuff I'm seeing. There's a lot of so called left Hillary bashing going on out there, and I don't like it. Not because I'm a Hillary partisan, but because I would like to think as progressives that maybe we're better than that, Jim. We're supposed to be better than that.
You know, I could go to the Hillary bashing thing if I wanted, but bottom line is, if I don't vote for Hillary, I'm not voting for any goddamn freaking Republican. The only choice is the Green Party, and you know that's like wish in one hand and shit in the other. Kind of thing.
Yeah, it's. I mean, yeah. Unless you're in a state that's so solidly Democratic that it's a foregone conclusion. I mean, California. You know, you want to vote for a Green because you know you got a really big conscience or something. Okay, cool, good for you. But in a state where it matters, where it's close. Oh no.
Nevada might be close because the only thing that's probably turned Nevada red. I mean, blue, or what do they call it, purple, when it's kind of a toss-up, is, you know, just influx of you know, the population's been growing, and, you know, there's a lot of, most of them turn out being Democratic. I mean, because I remember in 2000, that's why, but before, in 08, it wouldn't have mattered. I mean, because Nevada was that strong, red. But it's, you know, so that's what going away. I mean, since 04, I guess 04, that would be what, 12 years, 2016. Yeah, so it's changed a lot. And And yeah, I'm looking. I want to see it. You know, I'm looking forward to it. So I guess I'll just turn the volume down.
Well, and by the way, well, wait. This is kind of important. I just got a piece of information from Harold. He says CN moved the debate time back to 8:30 Eastern, 5:30 Pacific.
Okay.
So that makes kind of a difference.
Okay. Wow. Well, I'll get the last first half hour with you, and then I'll just switch over to Malloy.
Yeah, and I've got to talk with Boss Man Wayne and see if like there's internet and somewhere to set up. It's.
Have you heard anything, any new news? Or I mean, it's obvious you've noticed. I started with my mother yesterday, and she's not a Bernie supporter by any stretch of the imagination. But she said, "I hardly hear anything, Tom. Is there like a blackout on him?" I said, "You got it, Ma. Welcome to the
Look at the 32,000 people in Boston that the for-profit media didn't cover." But they did send some reporter up to a New Hampshire Hillary pancake breakfast with an exclusive interview.
Yeah. Do you think Bernie will get on Saturday Night Live?
I don't know. He did make it on to Meet the Prestitutes yesterday.
Yeah. What's his name? Chuck Todd? Is that the guy? I don't even know.
Yeah, Joke Toad. Yes. In point of fact, Chris Saliza, who is inside the Beltway there in D.C. with the Washington Post, has a blog post today, or yesterday, no, today. Why Bernie Sanders isn't going to be president in five words.
What were the five words?
It's an exchange from Meet the Prestitutes. Joke Toad says, "Are you a capitalist?" And Bernie says, "No, I'm a democratic socialist."
And Chris, I don't know why that word.
And Chris Saliza says, "And in those five words, Sanders showed why, no matter how much energy there is for him on the liberal left, he isn't getting elected president."
Okay, I'm a year or two older, 3 years older than you, and we've had the Democrats and Republicans running it for a mighty long time.
Right, and that's been downhill. That's exactly the point that Saliza makes. He says, "Why? Because Democrat or Republican or Independent, capitalism remains a pretty popular concept, especially when compared to socialism. A 2011 Pew Research Center survey showed that 50% of people had a favorable view of capitalism, while 40% had an unfavorable one. Of socialism, just 3 in 10 had a positive opinion, while 61% saw it in a negative light."
Yeah, well, I mean, you've got Social Security, which is a form of, you got the military, which is socialism, the police department, and the fire department, which, you know, those are basically socialistic in a lot of ways, but...
And that's the kind of thing you can explain, you hope.
Yeah,
what this boils down to, Jim, is how do you feel about the American electorate? On the one hand, there's the old adage that you can never go broke underestimating the American people.
The stupidity of them. Yeah, I totally agree with that. I concur 100%.
And if that's the case, then Chris Saliza is right. On the other hand, if in the course of a national presidential election, you say, "Do you want more good roads or less good roads?" I'm the guy who believes in more good roads. Do you want more health care or less health care? I'm the guy who believes in more health care. You hope that the American people can get their teeny tiny itsy bitsy microscopic little freaking minds around that.
I totally totally concur. It's just like with health care. I mean, I think what Obama did, and, you know, I think he's actually, I give him thumbs up for the most part. There's a lot of things he didn't do. But I think getting the health care thing, he got passed. Even though it's not the best by any stretch of the imagination, maybe that's the camel getting its nose on the proverbial tent for socialism. You know, but he could, you know, I mean, he couldn't even dare call it socialized medicine. Because, I mean...
Well, because it isn't socialized medicine. And you know what? It may be the camel's nose under the tent, Jim, but if it is, it's the camel's nose under the tent, perhaps for reverse reasons. What we're finding out, yes, the Affordable Care Act is working insofar as more people still have health care than didn't. But it's not working because there's still millions of people who don't have health care, largely centered in the Confederacy. Okay, West Virginia and Kentucky, we got health care. And I haven't even heard rumblings out of the West Virginia wild-eyed teabagging legislature majority saying, oh, we're going to take that shit away. Because apparently they know that they might have a little problem on their hands if they said it. But, you know, if you're in South Carolina, North Carolina, Tennessee, Georgia, Florida, Mississippi, Alabama, Louisiana, Texas, Oklahoma, Stan. I mean, God, there's even some access for poor folks getting health care in Arizona, Ohio, and Arkansas.
But there's still
Texas alone has God only knows how many millions of uncovered working adults. And as we go forward and this generation ages, and as the Gen Xers and Gen Yers and everything move into their not quite so bulletproof as they were in their 20s, 30s, and 40s, it'll start to matter to them too.
Yeah, well, also, I mean, it's just like, okay, you got a good job, you're in your 40s, but all of a sudden, when you're in your 50s, they're going to be starting to get rid of you, looking for a way to get rid of you. I think that's kind of what happened to me. But not only that, there's that thing on TuneIn Radio where a guy basically, it's one of those whole 3 or 4 minute breaks, but the guy's telling a story about, okay, well, Bob, we want you to train this guy how you do your job. Then 6 months later, you're out of a job. All of a sudden, because you've trained them and they can do the job overseas and they don't need you, so they pay them half the money, you know, half the money they're going to pay you, plus they have to pay your insurance or, you know, what quote unquote benefits, which are probably disappearing as fast as, you know, dew on a hot desert, the not hot Nevada desert, morning in summertime. I think that's the way things are going. Do you have any feel on that?
I'm kind of at a loss because I'm between what I want this country to be and what I know it is. You know what I mean?
Me too. Welcome to the club. But I mean, the Republicans there's not one Republican that's any I could even vote for. No way.
I try to be kind of dispassionate about it, Jim. And here's the game I play. Maybe you'll find it fun, too. If it was between, say, and what we're doing is we're factoring the Democrats all the way out of it.
Right.
If the contest was between, say, T-Rump and Jebbia.
I have to go with T-Rump because we've got enough of the Bush dynasty.
Okay, what if it's between T-Rump and Kasich? Well, I mean, he signed. I mean, Kasich, whatever. He signed on to the Medicaid expansion in Ohio. He took the free big government, dirty Kenyan Muslim socialist usurper money, so poor people could have some access to health care.
Yeah, that was the one. When you said that, that's exactly what I thought. Okay, yeah, I'd have to go with Kasich, I guess.
What if it's between Carly Farina and Ben Carson?
I'm voting Green Party, man. I just can't even face it.
Oh, yeah, you just drop the acid and walk away, don't you? Yeah, sure.
Yeah,
me too.
There's no way. There's no way. There's no freaking way, man. It's just... No. Oh, man.
You know, I haven't really hit you with one in a while. I haven't heard you lose it in a while, Jim. That's refreshing.
You haven't heard what?
I haven't heard you lose it in a while. That was good.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just, no, and it's just like when Donald Trump was kind of making fun of her for, you know, not being, quote unquote, attractive or whatever, and the thing is, she got mad. That even made her more unattractive, you know, from what I saw in the replay. I think I saw that as one time I watched.
Well, I wonder if the Carly Farina phenomenon has sort of had its run.
I mean, think it has, because
she got so grotesquely caught in that great big whopping giant freaking lie, a pair of them, you know, the one that she saw a video that doesn't even exist, and the two, the second being the horrifying story of how terrible it is to lose a baby when the baby in question was 30-some-odd years old and wasn't hers.
Yeah. I don't know. I can't even fathom the Republican mind. I mean, I remember a long, long time ago when they were pushing insane McCain as the reasonable Republican, and that's like 20, 25 years ago, the uncontrollable Republican. I don't know, last 10 or 15 years, he's been like a lapdog pretty much.
Oh, yeah, he was a maverick in 2004 until the Bush family slapped him around a little bit and said, buddy, look here, watch what we can do. And they ran the push polls in the South Carolina primary saying, did you know that John McCain has an adopted Negro baby? And John went, wow, these guys play hard. They play for keeps. Yep, all right, well, before you have me killed or something, I think I'll shut up.
Yeah, I guess it does. Man,
the problem is, it doesn't matter let's say that some sort of, and I guess the closest you can get, and, you know, save the emails, I know he's not, but let's say the closest you can get to an Eisenhower Republican is John Kasich. Well, he can't carry his own party, because the Republican Party, the base, the people that party relies upon, Jim, to carry the ball, they're nothing but a rump of disgruntled white people. I mean, their positions are somewhere to the right of Genghis freaking Khan.
Yep. My 70-some-odd-year-old aunt, was she 76, I guess, 77, 76. You know, she started drifting off into politics. It's like, I don't even want to talk. I don't even know where you're coming from. I know you're full of crap. I don't want to waste my time. You can waste your time. But I don't want to waste my time even talking to you.
The fascinating part of all of this is that when they nominate one of those lunatics, the race will probably come down to 51-49, 50.5 to 49.5, 52-48, 53-47, because it is a first past the post binary choice.
Yeah. Right.
And so it actually gives to that weird, bizarre, ultra-right-wing, fascist right a legitimacy that they don't actually have in terms of numbers in this country.
Exactly.
And the gerrymandering just adds to that.
Yeah, I mean, that just makes more of a lock. I mean, what would it be to, I mean, Kasemi, Bernie, I'm good with Bernie. Bernie wins, and then he wins with his big coattails. I mean, like you talked about, and I think, yeah, you know, other guys up here, Hartman and Malloy, you only have a small window of time to get your bills passed. And that's also assuming facts, not in evidence, such as, how do you like that, facts, not in evidence, almost like it was a lawyer.
Ooh.
Anyway, facts, not in evidence, such as that coattail is good enough to get the legislation you want to get passed to get things going where you want to go. I mean, that's a real reality where, you know.
I agree. I've sat here on this program and laid out the few times that we've actually made real progress in this country toward equality, toward some degree of economic fairness, and those opportunities are about 2-3 years long, and they're here and gone like mushrooms after a spring rain. With the Confederacy out of the Congress, they got some things done. With the Republicans in a distinct minority, having created the Great Depression, the FDR Congress got some things done. There were some things accomplished vis-a-vis civil rights and social welfare in the Johnson administration in the wake of the assassination of John Kennedy. Those opportunities are few and far between, and they are flash gone.
Well, you saw what happened with Obama. I mean, they say he had 2 years. No, he didn't. Actually, the number I heard is like 56 days, 57 days. Like,
nah, that's bull. I mean, anybody who says, oh, well, he had a Congress, bull. The House, under Nancy Pelosi, tried to accomplish some things, and I give them credit for what they did try to accomplish. And the Senate, how long did it take before Al Franken was finally seated back in 2009? It took the better part of 2009. And during that time, and as long as you've got a recalcitrant minority who insists on a 60-vote majority to pass anything, well, nothing is going to happen. So, when the history is written of Barack Obama's presidency, it's going to be a history, Jim, of what ifs. What if Barack Obama had a Congress he could work with? Because he has never had one.
Oh, yeah, and it's all racist, 99%.
Even the Affordable Care Act was sort of rammed, cajoled through, what have you, at the expense of any consideration of a public option, at the expense of any consideration of universal single payer. And, you know, that was Max Baucus, a Democrat, who did that. That wasn't some goddamn Republican.
Take two.
I mean, we were promised Harry Reid. I was in a room where Harry Reid promised that the whole country would be able to join any worker in the country would be able to join a union via what's known as card check. I mean, you're out in Vegas. You know what card check is.
Yeah.
Under the Employee Free Choice Act, he said, we'll have it by summer. This was the day after the first inauguration of Barack Obama. I was there. Okay? It didn't happen. And that was stopped by Ben Nelson, a Democrat from Nebraska, and Blanche Lincoln, the Democrat from Walmart. And these are just facts. Barack Obama never had a Congress that was completely committed to working with him.
Oh, definitely. I mean, even if you were a Democrat in the South, you were a white Democrat.
And by 2010, yeah. I mean, that was January 22nd, 2009, when Harry Reid said that. By November 2010, all of those Republican light, blue dog Dems that Rahm Emanuel had worked so tirelessly to put into office, they were gone, baby, because the South took one look and said, well, what, Republican light, Republican? I'm going to take the really crazy one. I'm going to take the straight-up Republican. And yeah, so, you know, so-called a Southern moderate Democrat is a Northern
Republican.
Is a Northern Republican liberal.
Oh, well, old school Republican. Old school. I mean, these Republicans now you have are just so whack. It makes you think of the 30s in Germany. Does that count as the first Hitler analogy?
No, that did. Wait a minute. 7:50. Time out. It's kind of cheating when you ask it, when you use the word within the context of it, but you still get one. 7:50.
What after?
7:50. 7:50 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. 7:50. Damn it, Gerald! I don't know how he does it. I think if he'd just give me the lottery numbers, we could make things a lot better here at the Horn. I don't know how he knows what time that's going to happen, but.
That's what I'm feeling. I'm feeling hopefully optimistic, with a Freudian stuff. But hopefully optimistic. I'm sure Bernie's gonna kick ass, do really well. I'm curious to see what the commentators are gonna say.
I expect CNN's commentariat to be completely in the tank for Hillary, to the extent that that'll be the way their bias lies. I mean, I even caught some of this, and I was kind of surprised and disappointed. I caught some of this coming from Rachel Maddow the other night. I like and respect her journalism, because she really is a journalist.
Right.
But she did this piece on, and it was right after the weekend where Bernie had 32,000 people come out in Boston.
Right.
And without saying it overtly, she did this segment on the candidacy in 1968 of Eugene McCarthy and how her mom became an American citizen back then because she really wanted to vote for Eugene McCarthy, because Eugene McCarthy was anti-war. He was leading the anti-war movement. He had a big student following, young people. And without ever saying, so what, she did this whole thing about... And you know how our delivery is. And she said, and that summer in Boston, Eugene McCarthy put 45,000 people who wanted to see him become president in Fenway Park in Boston, Massachusetts. And they were excited. And she went on and on and on and on about it. And so Bernie's rally wasn't the biggest rally ever had for it was Eugene McCarthy. And Eugene McCarthy did not get to be president. He didn't even get close. And she never said, and this dynamic applies to Bernie Sanders. She just sort of let it hang there for her listeners to draw the same conclusion that, Bernie can't win. Because I think, for whatever her reasons are, I'm guessing she's pretty solidly pro-Hillary.
I don't even know if it's that. Me being a little bit more conspiratorial, I think, you're a lesbian, that's great. We like that. Kind of cool. I don't even know if she's pro-Bernie or not. I don't even know. Maybe she truly is Hillary for whatever reasons. But she wants to keep her... probably seven-figure job. She's probably making, you think, seven figures.
Well, and maybe that's, maybe that's what comes down from corporate. I don't think her ethics run that way. I think she's got a lot more a lot more well-developed sense of journalistic ethics than, say, anybody at CNN or Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, Jim. But that did, I watched it, and I kind of went, not because I'm such a diehard Bernie partisan. I mean, I know what the handwriting on the wall is going to be in November, and it's going to be Hillary or Bernie, most likely, versus, and I still think the solid money is on Jebbia, because he's got the solid money behind him, And here's where I draw the distinction. If Jebya is the nominee, as I expect him to be, Jim, he will absolutely destroy Hillary Clinton.
You think?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Because, see, remember after he was done being president, Bill became an adopted Bush? Remember that?
Uh-huh.
How he went hobnobbing up at Kennebunkport, and him and W gave noogies to each other and all of that. Well, inside that weird, sick, dysfunctional family, all they know how to do is compete with each other and try to destroy each other. And so, I really do. I think the machine that the Republicans built in 1992 is banging on all eight, and they will email and Benghazi Hillary Clinton into the ground. And she will not be at all well equipped to handle it. And that's not me saying that there's anything to the email scandal. It ain't a scandal. It's a nothing burger. And Benghazi is just a whole bunch of nothing. But it's the American people we're talking about. And we're talking about not just Jebya's campaign fund, but vast billions of dollars that are out there under the control of the Koch brothers and Sheldon Adelson and all these other right-wing weirdos. And you will not be able to turn on the television, Jim, without seeing Hillary Clinton eat small babies. Do you want a baby eater in the White House? And what about the emails? Did she personally shoot our ambassador in Benghazi? That's what some people say.
Well, I mean, just imagine when Bernie gets it. They can possibly once again the attacks that are going to be thrown at him.
The same money will be there, but they don't have a voting base that's been hating Hillary Clinton for 20 plus years, nearly a quarter of a century by the election.
Yeah.
I mean, the right wing in this country has been hating Hillary Clinton so long that it's become generational. A generation has passed the torch of Hillary hate to the next one.
When I started my mother the other day, it's not Hillary. I'm interested to hear Bernie. I want to see the debate. You know, I'm doing my mother's voice the best I can. And I'm like, well, you know, and I just told her, you know, for me and my situation, even if Hillary gets it, I'm going to have to vote for her because Republicans, they don't give a rat's ass about me. They just want privatized. Everything's privatized. I mean, that's, and then what they want is, like, everybody working for basically $7 an hour, no benefits, everybody part-time. If they can get it, that's what they're shooting for. I mean, if you don't believe that,
if you don't believe it, you're not out there in working America right now.
What's that?
If you don't believe that, you're not in working America.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to let somebody else through.
All right, that's cool, because somebody's waiting. So, awfully good to talk to you, and we'll just play this by ear and see how it all works out tomorrow evening.
Okay, well, you're going to be on the air tomorrow, right?
Yeah, one way or the other. Just it's a question of whether I'm in the studio or over in Beckley.
Okay, well, as long as I get my Bob fixed, everything's cool.
All right, Jim, you take care. We'll talk soon.
You too.
All right, bye now. That's Jim in Nevada Stan, and let's keep it going. Also in Nevada Stan, hey, welcome to the program.
I am not in Nevada Stan.
Okay, your number is. Hey, John.
Hey, fairly quick. Had a fairly intense conversation today with some Democratic people that I work around and with, and they brought up something kind of interesting, and I thought I'd bounce off you and see what you think about it.
All right.
If just like Barack Obama is the quote-unquote leader of the Democratic Party, has benefits of it being president, a proposal was for a suggestion was tossed out that Bernie Sanders would not be elected president, even because the Democrats themselves would not want to have him and deal with the difficulty of a person who's not a true Democrat in the White House.
That is not unprecedented, John. I've seen it myself on my Facebook page. I've seen it said, well, I love Bernie's positions, but if he wants this, I'm a Democrat, and if he wants my support, he needs to be a Democrat.
Yeah, that's, the question goes down, is it, he's fortunately had a fair amount of funding from his, from his people and from his supporters and stuff. But when it gets down to the actual, punching of punching out the going for the main event, as it were, he's not going to have as much access because the Democratic establishment has already chosen Hillary, and that's
and that was explained to me as the reason that Debbie Wasserman Schultz, the head of the DNC, for instance, is in the tank for Hillary, because Hillary's a real Democrat. Never mind the fact that 90% of Bernie's policies, 99% of Bernie's policies, are straight out of the FDR playbook.
Yeah, but the difficulty is that he's not part of the establishment, and even if he were to become elected, let's call it what it really is. If he becomes elected, then he's not necessarily going to be able to hold the support of the Democratic Party, because they're not going to see him. He caucuses with them, but he's not one of them.
Hey, now see, there I won't go, because, one, the House is not going to become a Democratic majority in 2016.
Oh, no, I'm talking about the Senate. I'm talking about, the Senate and stuff.
And neither is the Senate.
Yeah.
So what you see, though, and we're witnessing a governmental evolution here, where a president hamstrung by a recalcitrant Congress has to do as much as possible within the administrative branch over which he is the executive. Okay, Congress controls the purse strings, but the president can enact, to a certain extent, the rules by which these administrative agencies operate. So, for instance, say the administrative rules about employee pay for government contractors. We've seen that. Non-discrimination against LGBTQQQ people in government contracting. We've seen that. And that there's nothing new in that. Harry Truman wanted to solve the segregation problem once and for all in his presidency, but of course the Congress, even when he had a Democratic Congress, was full of filthy ass racists. Strom Thurmond left the Democratic Party in 1948 over things like Truman's urge to desegregate. And so there was not going to, none of that was going to happen. But the things that Truman could control, he did. And so he desegregated the United States military, much to the benefit of the United States military. Because, oddly enough, where during the Civil War, freedmen had been welcomed into the military in segregated racist fashion, that quickly changed, and it rapidly became white folks only combat units for the First and Second World Wars, and that's what made things outfits like the Tuskegee Airmen so remarkable was that they were once again proving something that really didn't need to be proven, that they were capable. And so Truman desegregated the military over the howls of the racists.
Yeah, I'm just a little, like I said, I kind of put myself as a Bernie supporter, but I guess maybe it's because of the time and experience I spent in Washington. I just have this not back to the next suspicion that you know, the establishment is the establishment for a reason. And
but that applies to any new president, okay? You know, Jimmy Carter came in 1977 as an anti-establishment president and immediately pissed off all the inside the Beltway Democrats. Ronald Reagan ran on being anti-establishment, came in and proceeded to lick the boot soles of the entire Republican establishment, and to a certain extent the Democratic establishment in Washington. That hence we are constantly to this day confounded by the absolutely well-worn stories that Chris Matthews prattling on about how Reagan got along with Tip O'Neill. Well, that was only because Tip O'Neill rolled over to get his belly scratched.
Yeah, well, that's...
But I mean, there's nothing new in that. So, for me, that's a bullshit argument. I mean, I'm not saying you're making a bullshit argument, but it's the kind of bullshit argument that seems to be bubbling to the surface now as the Hillary camp tries to figure out any way possible to slow the momentum that Bernie Sanders has developed.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. I just, you know, it was a pretty heated conversation today about that. And I was surprised at the vitriol that went into that. I mean, the things that they would tolerate as long as he was in the Senate about, you know, being a, you know, quote unquote socialist, democratic socialist, and all that stuff. It kind of comes up and bites you when they start really getting into the mechanics of.
I've never heard of a position taken by Bernie Sanders that is something with which I just wholeheartedly disagreed. I mean, I don't fully agree with him on firearms, but by the same token, his position on firearms is going to play better in this state than Hillary's will. It'll play better in much of redneck America than Hillary's will. And you really can't hang Bernie's gonna get your goons on him the way you can on Hillary, even though Hillary can't get anybody's guns either.
Yeah, well, that's a non-starter in itself. I mean, you know, you'd have to literally go into everybody's house out everywhere just to even make an attempt at that.
No, no. A buyback would work.
The way the Republicans, you know, like to not spend money. What? You'd have to provide.
Right, but you got to have a Congress. You got to have a Congress, sure.
No, and you're not going to have one. I mean, those bastards can't even. They can't even choose their own freaking leaders anymore. You know, they're trying to fight with the witch flaming wacko that they're gonna go with. I mean, how can we as a country hold our head up high, as it were, when, you know, other countries look at us and, you know, holy crap, you know, they can't even, you know, put together a governing coalition in their own government. You know, can't pass a damn thing worth a squat. It's like, yikes, that's just not right.
Well, the only thing the rest of the world really cares about, they don't care if we shoot ourselves to pieces. What the rest of the world cares about is whether the currency is going to remain stable.
Well, there were some interesting conversations about that, but I'll leave that for another day. But, yeah, I just thought I'd bring that up to stir the pot a little bit. I'll let you go.
All right, you have a good evening, John.
Thanks a lot.
Bye. All right, be safe. Bye now. Our buddy John calling from out on the road, not in Nevada-stan. I stand corrected, yeah. Note coming in from Earther. To me, Bernie at 70-something has more energy, passion, and righteousness than Hillary does. Yes, I know Hillary is smart, too. Yeah, and I agree, Earther. Again, I'm not going to engage in Hillary bashing. I can't stand it. Because I just want us to be better than that. That's all. I'd rather spend my time not bashing, but talking about the realities of the right wing, the danger they pose to this country. And I know a lot of people disagree with me. Like I said, there's a contingent that refers to Dr. Senator Secretary Clinton as Hitlery, which I find absolutely disgusting. And then there's Shillery, because of course she's a shill for Wall Street. And you know who? Hey, you know what? We may have a blast under President Jebya, right? And I had a note from Carol a minute ago saying, you know, that the bigotry fatigue in this country may be such that America can't take 8 years of, you know, the woman who will be portrayed as Vagzilla. And I admit to fatigue. Do you? I'm worn out. I am worn out with the re-racisming, re-racistizing, Jesus, it's got to be a better word, of this country that we've witnessed since the election of Barack Obama. That is a poor reason for making it. That's certainly not a reason to vote for Bernie. But the stuff that's already out there. I mean, going back to this Chris Saliza, this Chris Saliza post, and by God, said this just disgusted her. Saliza hammering away. In addition, a recent Gallup poll showed that half of Americans said they would not vote for a socialist. It was, in fact, the least acceptable characteristic tested behind Muslim and atheist. And that's, you know, you would expect better of Gallup, but why should you? Between now and here's, I mean, you want an example of a push poll question? Here it is. Between now and the 2016 political conventions, there will be discussion about the qualifications of presidential candidates, their education, age, religion, race, and so on. If your party nominated a generally well-qualified person for president who happened to be blank, would you vote for that person? The blank Catholic, 93% would, 6% would not. A woman, 92% would, 8% would not. Black, 92% would, 7% would not. Hispanic, 91% would, 8% would not. Jewish, 91% would, 7% would not. Wait a minute, doesn't Bernie get to be Jewish? Mormon, 81% yes, 18% no. Gay or lesbian, 74% yes, 24% no. Evangelical Christian, 73% would, 25% wouldn't. Muslim, 60% would, 38% wouldn't. Atheist, 58% would, 40% wouldn't. Socialist, 47% say yes, 50% say no, they would not. So that's not exactly unelectable. If 47%, and I've seen this goddamn poll question laid out in more than one or two posts, and they all come to the same conclusion. See? Bernie can't be president. And almost every time I've seen a story with this poll question posted, it has been by a Hillary supporter. But all it says is that 47% of America would vote for a socialist for president. And 50% say they would not. I'll take those odds. It's not like it's 2% would and 98%. Oh, hell no! And frankly, you have to take into account that this is probably more polling that's done based on hardwired telephone numbers. So these are phone calls to Emery and Marvelline.
Marvelline? Hey, the feller on the phone here wants to know if we'd vote for a commie Jew boy.
And Saliza tries to take some of the piss out of the own the arguments against the argument that he's positing. Yes, I am aware that some more recent polling, internet based, it's worth noting. You know, granted, he's publishing on the internet, but you know, internet based polling, that's a bunch of bullshit. Suggests that socialism is getting more and more popular, particularly among the young whippersnappers. But even in that internet survey, and even among millennials, the group most inclined to see socialism favorably, capitalism is still preferred by more people. More people like Coke than Pepsi. Saliza says that the Republicans will just run ads calling him a socialist, and that'll be the end of Bernie. So, apparently, according to the Gallup push poll numbers, he should run as a Jew and not a socialist. Because at least he's got a 91% chance there. And, you know, maybe along the way say, I'm a Jew like your savior was, is, who was a socialist like I am. Ah, God, there's a palpable sense of desperation out there. And, of course, there's the fact that, you know, America has been told that socialist means commie. Me? I got a sneaking suspicion that Bernie can explain what democratic socialist means. In fact, better than anybody running for the Republican nomination can explain what capitalist means. Now, if we take as granted here at 18 minutes past the hour, in the third hour of the program on this More In Monday, if we take as granted that CNN will behave in typical chicken noodle news fashion tomorrow evening, I mean, they did such a wonderful job with that Republican pageant, then somewhere along the way, you can expect the question, probably from Jake Tapper. I don't know who's hosting. Senator Secretary Clinton, you love puppies and kittens, don't you? Why, yes, I do. What do you think of the fact that Bernie's a commie socialist Jew? I will not fall out of my chair if it plays that way. Senator Sanders, you're a socialist, correct? Oh, I'm a democratic socialist. Why did your people kill Christ? Yes, I'm painting with a very, very broad brush. But isn't that in line with the kind of journalism we can expect from Chicken Noodle News? Oh dear God, no, Jug a Punch, no, in the chat room, Jug a Punch said, oh, they should have Wolf Blitzer. No, please, no, please. In a minute, somebody will email me and tell me who the hosts are for tomorrow night. The Inquisitors. By the way, going back to the healthcare issue, Bob in Texas. I mentioned Texas has more uninsured people than any other state in the nation, and they measure in the millions and millions. It's not like 1 million and change. Oh, that's true, Devin. The broad brush is more efficient. Bob in Texas points out, Bob, the people here in Texas are so politically stupid that they don't understand that affordable health care is even possible. They will not open their stupid minds. Hey, I got an idea. Let's try this. Let's offer free health care for the working poor in Texas, and when you sign up, everybody gets a gun. Or let's make sure health care is available to every college student in Texas, and everybody gets a gun. Oh, you think I'm kidding? I mean, I understand what Bob's getting at. I'd like to hope that it's not that bad. I think it's being stymied, not so much by the people, but by the people that the people elect, because of the just absolutely bizarre. I mean, if you look at the gerrymandered district map of Texas, goddamn, there are things in there that look like stuff that you haven't seen since you gazed into a microscope back in 10th grade biology. In August of 2016, when classes, it's called Long Session, I think, open at the University of Texas at Austin, because freedom, everybody who wants to get a concealed carry permit will be able to carry a firearm on the campus of the University of Texas at Austin. Remember, this is liberal Austin. Mm-hmm. This is, of course, not Austin's doing. This is not the university's doing. This is the doing of Greg Abbott. The, oh my God, I still can't believe it, governor of Texas. But the beautiful thing about youth is that in any generation, youth will have a certain resistance to authority and a desire to mock that authority. And we're talking about something that is more, that is almost a year away, 10 months away, the opening of the new term in August of 2016. It was back in June when Greg Abbott signed the campus carry law into effect. And it's not playing well with a certain segment of the population. The university itself still hasn't quite figured out how to cope with it. The Chicken Noodle News story notes that University of Texas System Chancellor William McRaven, a former Navy SEAL admiral, said, I've spent my whole life around guns. I grew up in Texas hunting. I spent 37 years in the military. I like guns, but I just don't think having them on campus is the right place. Because after all, this is the University of Texas, who introduced in the modern era America to the idea of mass killings with the shootings from the tower there at the University of Texas at Austin. Beautiful campus. Beautiful. University of Texas and West Virginia University were founded at roughly the same time, and it's amazing to see the differences in how the two grew. But anyway, Admiral McRaven is in charge of implementing Senate Bill 11, and that's the Texas Concealed Campus Carry Law, in which Texas joined Colorado, Idaho, Kansas, Mississippi, Utah, Wisconsin, and Oregon. Yeah, Oregon. Where the right-wingers holler,
yeah, Umpqua Community College was one of your gun-free zones. See what happens, you bunch of liberal commie sissies?
Only it wasn't. And so while Admiral McRaven can't do much about it, some Texas students are. Because, see, here's the fun part, and this is what makes it a More End Monday story. In Texas, you'll be able to concealed carry a deadly weapon onto campus, but if you carry a dildo onto campus, you will be liable for arrest and prosecution. Yeah. Well, enter Jessica Jin, organizer of Cox Not Glocks, a protest that is taking shape now and will be in full bloom by the time the law takes effect. University students at Texas in Austin are committing to open carrying dildos to class, on campus, around and about. Maybe they'll sit there proudly waving burnt orange dildos in the stands as they cheer the presently hapless Texas Longhorns on to victory after the athletic director has fired Charlie Strong. Naturally, the gun humpers are really mad that Jessica Jin is making fun of them. They don't like it when people make fun of them for their freedom protecting. They've already been taken to attacking Jessica Jin on social media. A post I saw earlier, she said, "I'm leaving the nastiness up now so people can see how these gun people behave." Jessica Jin wrote, "You're carrying a gun to class? Yeah, well, I'm carrying a huge dildo, just about as effective at protecting us from sociopathic shooters, but much safer for recreational play." I love it. Cox, not Glocks. And, you know, this is part and parcel of something I mentioned the other night, namely making gun carrying as socially unacceptable as, say, smoking. Imagine that. According to Texas law, you can be arrested for any writing or visual image or in any public performance that is deemed, of course, by the cops, because they get to do the deeming, obscene. Uh-huh. Yeah, after all, where's the obscenity? Yeah. Where indeed? Of course, I guess at least in Texas you can buy one. Does Alabama still have its no dildos law on the books? By the way, as a result, tenure's precious and hard to come by on any college campus. Well, one UT professor has already announced that he's going to quit teaching at University of Texas Austin because he does not feel safe with a room full of potentially armed students. And see, you don't have to be nervous about, you know, one of them going all freedom protector on you. Accidents alone are enough. Witness the two-year-old with Gammy from earlier in the program. But it is kind of neat that, encouraging that we're beginning to see a bit of pushback about our gun-humping obsession. Witness Amy Schumer's skit on Saturday Night Live this past Saturday night.
Whatever you're waiting for,
this sounds like a brand game.
Whatever you face, whatever you're looking for, there are things we all share. Love. Family. Connection.
Hey.
A sense of purpose. And also, guns. Guns are there in little moments and big ones. When things fall apart or it all comes together, they unite us, comfort us, bring us joy and strength. From first loves to new beginnings. Where wherever life takes you, guns, we're here to stay.
That was brilliant. Just brilliant. I'm not sure which part I like better. The woman in labor being wheeled into the maternity ward, pointing a hunting rifle at everybody, or the newly in love couple laying on the grass, shooting their freedom protectors at falling stars. Hey, by the way, and this is just fun, did you know that up until 2005, again, in Texas, it was illegal to possess six or more dildos? Oddly enough, you can possess hundreds of firearms. So that begs the question. When is the last time you heard about a story of a mass killing of American citizens by, say, a crazed white guy with a bunch of dildos? Well, I mean, if it's getting like three D-cell batteries in it, I guess you could beat somebody to death. Being it's kind of soft and stuff, probably wouldn't even leave a bruise. You know, like soap in a pillowcase. In answer to the question about the debates, oh, here's your lineup, and you're gonna love it. Of course, Anderson Cooper will be there, longtime friend of the Clinton family. Jake Tapper is out. No, not like that. Anderson Cooper's, and we don't know if there will be Calliope music or not. I'm hoping yes. But Anderson Cooper will have the assistance of Don Lemon. Maybe he can ask the participants what they think about these crazy young Negroes with their sagging pants. You know, Cosby-splaining. And also, Dana Bash will be there. Hard-hitting journalist, full of journalistic integrity. And CNN en Español anchor Juan Carlos López. Don't know much about Juan Carlos. I mean, that at least makes sense. Oh, boy. Don Lemon. Ooh-wee! There'll be some hard-hitting journalism there. Writing from Australia on the subject line, protecting freedom, Robert says, I protect my freedom by voting. Yeah, but you don't have any freedom over there. We've already been through that. We checked in with Fox News TV Radio Rwanda just last week, Robert, and they made it abundantly clear that you're living in a land of miserable tyranny. I mean, you ain't got any guns. Writing from Shreveport, Jack says, I'm still pissed that they asked Dennis Kucinich about UFOs. You remember who was sponsoring or moderating that debate? I don't, but I'll never forget that moment. And with regard to the two-year toddler busting a cap in Granny, Jack says, was the two-year-old classified as a lawful gun owner? I wonder about it in some states. Kid was smart enough to fire the weapon, but the grannies weren't smart enough to keep a gun away from him. Well, they may not. They probably. That's the thing with your freedom protector. You can forget it's there. I mean, you only remember it if you need it. Kind of like the brake pedal. But of course, the other question is, why wasn't our little Wolverine? Why wasn't he in a car seat? I mean, I'm guessing we're not talking about a little baby Jethro Bodine here, born with a full set of teeth, just like a beaver. There's no circumstance under which you don't have a 2-year-old in a Camaro, for God's sakes, or a Maybach, for that matter, in a car seat. I mean, Agnes will go up to people on the street and go, "Why is that baby not in a car seat?" But I don't know. I'm going to need some help from South Carolina, Stan. Are car seats optional like motorcycle helmets in South Carolina? Beats me. By the way, we are 2 hours and 40 minutes into the program. And your calls are still welcome if you want to round out the evening in conversation, a la Conversation Radio. You know the numbers, 304-574-8178 or 304-663-HORN. And Bob Kincaid Horn, Skype to Skype. I got a note from Steve. Since his challenge was not fulfilled on Friday, he renewed it for this evening. $25 challenge for the first 25 bucks that come in by way of helping us keep the bills paid here, and God knows there's plenty of them. Steve will match the first $25 that come in, and we try to raise $200 every evening and are thus far at zero. So hopefully that will change. Oh, what else? I got a heaping big pile of Morans here. That's kind of got saved for Wednesday on it. Yeah, that really is saved for Wednesday. We've been talking about Bernie to some degree here. You remember Pharma Bro? Pharma Jerk? Martin Shkreli? Oh, by the way, it was Tim Russert. Jack, it was Tim Russert who asked Dennis Kucinich about the UFOs. Isn't that interesting? Dennis Kucinich is still here. Tim Russert? Not so much. So, at Senator Sanders on Twitter, which is Bernie, said Martin Shkreli is holding hostage the patients who rely on his life-saving medication by charging unconscionable prices just because he can. Martin Shkreli, who is, in fact, holding patients hostage by charging unconscionable prices just because he can and because he wants to fund some team inside some alternate universe that he game plays in, responded by saying, "It's amazing to me that you, desiring to be the leader of our country, are so misinformed. Let's have a public debate on this." This barely 30-year-old twit thinks that he has the mental faculties to go up against Bernie Sanders. Then he continued, Martin Shkreli, you know, that you can get a cream for your Shkreli. You can be Shkreli-free and 6 weeks. At Bernie Sanders doesn't understand healthcare. I hope he debates this topic with me instead of relying on sound bites and cheap shots. maybe Marty's feeling a little nervous. Because, see, Senator Sanders and Representative Elijah Cummings of Maryland, back a couple of weeks ago, asked him for financial data about touring pharmaceuticals. This, of course, happening in as Shkreli in turn has hired what Cummings and Sanders referred to as an army of new Washington lobbyists and lawyers to stem the massive fallout from his actions and to stymie congressional oversight. Now, by way of explaining himself, Shkreli responded,
"I don't even have a driver's license, dude. Our company is not profitable. My salary's zero. I give millions to charity."
Yeah, okay. But that doesn't change the fact that he jacked up the price on a drug that is agonizingly necessary for, you know, people trying to survive with HIV. Dick. You know, I just can't. I can't do that the justice that. No, I just can't.
You dick!
Yes, much better. Much better. So we got that going for us. But finally, just to round out this Moran Monday, which has been such a cornucopia of moranity, I give you brain surgeon, probably should have been a fry cook, maybe a streetcar conductor with a nickel squirter, Dr. Ben Carson, who got invited yesterday, being Sunday, to address the upstanding, God-fearing, Bible-believing, Christ-centered Christians at the Free Chapel in Gainesville, Georgia, which is a megachurch and has a light and sound system that would, it would make Pink Floyd green with envy. Ooh, see what I did there? Sometimes I'm just proud. And the theme of his message was that Merca, the greatest country in the world on earth now, today, forever, is a Christian nation. Which, of course, is a giant steaming load of hogwash. But most of America doesn't know that. No. So, just for the fun of it, a few of Dr. Ben's opening remarks.
Thrilled listening to the PA system, Dr. Jones, to the emergency room, Dr. Johnson. They sounded so important. And I'd be thinking one day they'd be saying, Dr. Carson. But of course, now they have beepers, so, you know. But.
Early disappointments in the career of Dr. Carson.
You know, I love to hear the mission stories in church, which frequently feature missionary doctors who traveled all over the world.
And hopefully managed not to get bombed by the United States military. That's missionary doctors, not the ones at Doctors Without Borders. I love to hear the story, the old story. Never mind.
At great personal expense and danger to bring not only physical, but mental and spiritual healing to people. And they seem to me like the...
You know, you would think that it was only Christian missionary doctors who did that, but I happen to know for a fact that there are atheist physicians, agnostic physicians, who go into underserved and badly in need parts of the planet to give away their expertise and their time to make life a little bit better for people who otherwise, for whom otherwise it might not be. I know that for a fact. Because a dear friend and member of this community does exactly that and has done it for years. So much for that whole only Christians have morals thing there, Reverend Pastor, Governor, Brother, Diabetes, Snake Oil Cure Salesman, Huxterby. Huh, yep.
Most noble people on earth. And I determined when I was 8 years old that I was going to be a missionary doctor.
Let me clear something up. Just make it. This is what you call in evangelical fundamentalist parlance. This is Dr. Carson's testimony. Testify. This is that.
And that was my dream from the time I was 8 until I was 13, at which time, having grown up in dire poverty, I decided I'd rather be rich. So, at that
point, now I am. What? So, in other words, by the age of at the age of 8, he decided he wanted to serve Christ, and by the age of 13, he decided, "Dad, screw Christ, I want to be rich." Because see, Christ wasn't a fan of rich people. Just saying. Wait a minute. Michael Seven. Just saying.
At that point, missionary doctor was out, and psychiatrist was in. Now, I didn't know any psychiatrists, but on TV they seemed like rich people. You know, they drove Jaguars, and they had these fancy offices, and lived in big mansions, and all they had to do is...
Wait a minute, time out. I know how old Ben Carson is. What television show was there with a rich psychiatrist driving a Jaguar and living in a fancy house? I'm pretty well versed with television here. I got entire clusters of neurons that are busy remembering clips from Warner Brothers cartoons and can't remember how to do the goddamn quadratic equation because I was so immersed in television. What was the program? I mean, Bob Newhart was a psychologist, not a psychiatrist. And there was never a single scene of him driving a Jaguar, and he walked to work somewhere down in Chicago, around near those round buildings, and wearing a kind of a creepy, pervy old tan raincoat.
Just talk to crazy people all day. And
how nice. He thinks of people with mental illness as crazy people. By the way, this via the Angry Indian, just in case you were thinking of chewing through the hockey puck. Ben Carson says, Mahmoud Abbas, Ali Khamenei, the present supreme leader of Iran, and Vladimir Putin all knew each other in 1968 Moscow. Yeah, they're drinking buddies or something, I guess.
Seemed like I was doing that anyway, so I said, this is going to work.
Oh, he's really killing there at the Free Church Mega Church. Prosperity Gospel, y'all.
Work out extremely well. And I started reading Psychology Today. I was the local shrink in high school. Everybody brought me their problems. I would sit them down.
This is a way of him saying he never got laid in high school. He was in what the youngins refer to today as the friend zone.
Stroke my chin.
Yeah, there was some stroking going on.
Say, tell me about your mama. And I majored in psychology in college, and we had all kinds of fabulous professors, like Anna Freud, the daughter of Sigmund Freud. I mean, this was so cool. I was going to be like the world's greatest psychoanalyst. And then I got to medical school, and I started meeting a bunch of psychiatrists. Need I say more? But
yeah, because they're at the Free Gospel Church. Nobody there needs any mental health help. They're all just sane as can be because they had a little voice in their head talking to them, and it's Jesus.
My best friends are psychiatrists, but what I discovered pretty quickly is what psychiatrists do in real life and what they do on television are two completely different things.
Well, Ben, can I call you Ben? Ben. That's because the people on TV are actually these things that we call actors, and they're not real psychiatrists. And the people who are psychiatrists do something different because they're not actors, they're psychiatrists. And this guy wants to be president of the United States of America. But this is just some of the generic stupid that he babbled about. Maybe we'll save some more of his sermon for prayer meeting Wednesday. But the gist of it, and Dr. Bill touched on it some today, and again, take it, go subscribe to the podcast. You'll just be so darn glad you did. Referring to the lot of people who just walk around talking to Ben Carson when he's not suggesting that a gunman in Popeyes point a gun at a lot of people, which, by the way, turned out to be a great big honking lie on the level of the great big honking lies that Carly Farina has made mention of. A lot of people have said to me, why are you willing to get into this fray when you had such a wonderful career and reputation and you were blessed financially and you could just sit back and relax? Well, I'll tell you why. It's because America is worth saving. If that means getting into a war with the PC police, I'm ready to fight that war, and I hope you'll join me. The Pledge of Allegiance to our flag says we are one nation under God. Many courtrooms in the land on the wall says, in God we trust. Every coin in our pocket, every bill in our wallet says, in God we trust.
That's why he's running for president, because the Pledge of Allegiance says one nation under God. Except that the Pledge of Allegiance, and you know,
does he know this, or is he just that damned uneducated? Was written in the 1890s, the Pledge of Allegiance was, by a Baptist minister socialist who did not include under God. That was only in, under God was only inserted in the Pledge of Allegiance in the 1950s during the Red Scare and the McCarthy red baiting and all of that filthy, vile, hateful nastiness. So here's the thought experiment. He's sitting there talking to thousands of people in a mega church in Gainesville, Georgia. Did any single individual person there know that Dr. Ben Carson didn't know shit from Shinola regarding the Pledge of Allegiance's origins or where In God We Trust came from? Because that's going to answer a lot of our questions about who these right-wing freaks are in the clown barge that is the right-wing Republican campaign. And are there enough people who are stupid enough to put one of these clowns into the White House? Roger in Oregon says, does Carson explain that doctors could have avoided being killed if they had guns? Just wondering. Maybe those doctors in the hospital in Kunduz, Afghanistan should have jumped up really high and rushed the AC-130 that murdered them. Because I'm kind of down with Doctors Without Borders in saying that that was a war crime. the deliberate bombing of a hospital. By God, we'd have a tribunal. We'd have a tribunal convened in The Hague yesterday if an Iranian plane had done that, or if the only people we would not convene a tribunal over would be if us or the Israelis did it, and we both have. So there you go. Time to get out of here. Thanks very much for joining in this evening. I hope you enjoyed our conversation as much as I did. And thank you to Thomas and to Glenn, both of whom answered Steve's challenge. So that means that tomorrow evening we will enter the program with only a $325 fundraising deficit. And that's big. That's very helpful. It's rough when we end any given program on a goose egg. So thank you, Thomas, and thank you, Glenn. Thank you very, very kindly. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you to John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thank you to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ACACT, ACHEACT.org. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.